Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Now, last year, Lady Gaga released her sixth studio album. It's called Chromatica. And a couple of weeks ago, she released a remix version of the album called Dawn of Chromatica. So with the likes of Roisin Murphy and Dua Lipa both releasing hugely successful remixed versions of their latest albums in the past year, some might say we're in a golden age of remix albums, if that's your thing. But where did all this trend begin and why? I mean, should the originals just be left alone, for crying out loud? Well, journalist and host of the My Favourite Album podcast, Andrea Cleary, is on the line now to discuss the art of the remix album. How are you doing, Andrea? Are you all right?
I'm not too bad, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well indeed. Wow. Discuss the art of the remix album. I hope you can. First of all, what exactly is a remix album? Exactly what is it?
Yeah, it's many different things depending on what kind of era you're talking about. Remixing as an art form comes from the kind of the roots and dancehall culture of late 1960s and 1970s Jamaica, in the reggae, ska and dub communities there. But those communities, those musicians were very much concerned with remixing already existing tracks. They weren't necessarily going in for albums, really. And then that kind of transferred over into hip hop in late 70s, 1980s in America. You had the likes of Grandmaster Flash and Africa Bambaataa, some of the earliest hip hop artists to kind of employ this practice of sampling, but not necessarily across albums. Whereas now it is really interesting to see this rise in whole albums getting this remix treatment. So while it's not new, it's definitely becoming more popular and maybe cynically more lucrative for artists and for labels for a variety of different reasons. So, but I mean, if you want to look at maybe what the first remix album is, you're actually looking back to Harry Nilsson with Aerial Pandemonium Ballet. I don't know if you're familiar with
I'm
that.
Not. I'm familiar with Harry Nilsson, but not with Aerial Pandemonium Ballet, no.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's not one that I was actually even aware was a remix album until I looked into it. But so basically, Nilsson had a lot of success with his sixth album, The Point, which is where Everybody's Talking kind of came from.
Right.
So there was this kind of newfound interest into, well, what kind of other stuff has this guy produced or put out before? So there was a big demand then for his first two studio records, which were called Pandemonium Shadow Show and Aerial Ballet, and they're from 1967 and 1968. So in 1971, his label and himself, whoever in the boardroom, decided these tracks from these old records, they sound a bit dated by now, let's go back into the studio and let's tweak these recordings.
And
they did that to kind of varying degrees of success. Everybody's Talking, you could argue, didn't need to have anything done to it. I think that song's pretty much perfect as it is. And the rest of the tracks kind of got a bit of stick at the time for sounding a bit overdone or just a bit off and all, like off kilter maybe. So it's not the most exciting of remix records, but it definitely set a precedent for artists and labels to kind of revisit older material for commercial gain.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. You haven't even mentioned the fact that I would have thought one of the biggest things was for the dance floor. Isn't that what like a lot of it is about, really?
Yeah, it's just there's a few different reasons why you'd remix kind of an entire album. As I mentioned there, financially, you know, it does make sense to kind of keep albums in the cultural conversation.
Yeah.
But then also, remixing is an art unto itself. And
okay, listen, we're going to get to that in a second. I'm going to give you the example that you've given us here. Harry Nilsson, Everybody's Talking.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping, staring, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their
eyes. You see, that's
eyes.
So evocative of whatever it's supposed to be evocative of, and, you know, not just Midnight Cowboy or something, but, I mean, like, it's just, like, how dare they mess with something? Like, it's like taking, you know, I don't know, Wichita Lineman and messing up with it. So we got to see if this is going to kind of work. So let's take a look at some things here. Why, you know, remixing an entire album, surely one of the main things is that it keeps the album out there and completists want it as well, and we're talking money.
We are definitely talking money. I mean, if you look at the kind of modern remix album, it's a way for artists and labels to prolong like the era of an artist, which is, I suppose, how we've been talking yeah. about pop musicians in particular ever since Madonna, really. So you're trying to get as much out of those original album recordings as possible. I know that's a very cynical view, but I think I'm growing into quite a cynical person when it comes to the record industry. But it's also a way for artists to cross over into new markets and to get their music heard by people who listen to house music and dance music.
Yeah, no, see, that was the whole thing as well. Madonna being one of the first, like, if you, and saw the whole dance explosion and that, stick it out again, dance it up, and suddenly it sells another 500,000 or 1 million or whatever.
Absolutely. It's a play for a new market, I suppose. And it's not as if these songs don't work well when they're remixed, but I think the motivation is certainly there. And interestingly enough, it can also allow artists to release more music and keep themselves in the charts at a time when they can't actually afford to record new material. On the other hand, so the krautrock group New back in 1972, they released an album, New 2, where the B-side of that album contained nothing but remix versions of one previously released single, because they couldn't afford to record new songs.
Fantastic. Now, that's a very good reason. No question about it. So the classic remix albums then, you've mentioned Aerial Pandemonium Ballet. Mm. That's early 70s from Harry Nilsson. Surely from this century, the Beatles' Love album, Thingamabob, which was done for Las Vegas, which bizarrely, in the space of 4 months, I actually saw the show twice in May and June of whatever year it was. And it was basically to do with kind of one of these Cirque du Soleil things, wasn't it? That's why they put it together.
I'm very jealous that you got to see the show.
Yeah, it's a bit of a laugh. In fact, the funny thing is, the place that it's on, there's not that many there at night. It's less than about 2,000. And right. I went back with a bunch of friends. It was just great. It was really good. But at the same time, like, what they did to this, like, it was Giles Thingamabob, wasn't it? What's his name?
Giles Martin's son of
Martin's son put it all together. And I'll tell you what, I'll give you a little bit. I'm not so sure, like, that. Okay, yeah. It works in terms of the show, but do I want to go out and buy the remix album? Hold on, listen. All the noisy bits going on in the background there at the end, let alone the beginning as well. So, like, you know, this is like, it was done for the Cirque du Soleil thing in Las Vegas in the hotel there, and it'll run forever. It'll run for another 50 years. There'll be two shows every day, kind of thing. So, I presume that didn't do anybody any harm, and a lot of money was made, was it?
Yeah, I mean, there's enough Beatles completionists out there, myself included, who would be very interested in this as a new form of listening to the Beatles. And I think it is actually quite an interesting way to frame a remix album, because it's not about breathing new life into Beatles songs. You can go out there and find as many Beatles remixes as you like, but this is a way of kind of looking at the Beatles' full catalogue and seeing how it fits in together. I mean, we heard there, but before it kind of kicked in to Get Back, you're hearing Ringo's drum solo from The End, or you're hearing a mashup of Within You, Without You, with Tomorrow Never Knows, or these little transitions between songs from other songs that might be earlier or later in the catalogue. And I think it points to just how consistent the Beatles were in every stage of their vast career. And it's an interesting way to frame remix,
if you want to like all the originals that are there, you can have it. And this is just a different way of doing things. And to be honest, it actually certainly works in terms of the show. There's no question about that. So tell me about Björk, Telegram. Again, this is from 10 years earlier, 96.
Yeah, so this is 1996. Again, another different and interesting concept for a remix album. So these are 10 tracks that were remixed by various electronic musicians and producers. But the 10 tracks that they're remixing are actually B-sides from the UK singles of her album Post that was released in the previous year. So they're not going in and remixing Post, they're remixing the B-sides, which I think is an interesting way to go about it. But I think unlike the Beatles record, it's much less concerned with creating this big narrative and more about individual interpretations of the songs from very, very disparate genres. Like there's a bit of hip hop on the remix of I Miss You from the British alternative hip hop musician Dobie, and there's an incredible version of Hyper Ballad with a string quartet. And here, if you listen
I'll give you just a little bit of that Hyper Ballad with the Brodsky Quartet. Yeah. So, Andrea, a lot of the time then it's not kind of re-recording anything as such, like with the standard sort of stuff, a vocal, guitar, a bass, or whatever it happens to be. It's sort of up to a producer to reinterpret, and it kind of imagines directions that this sort of stuff can take, and you get a totally different thing. It doesn't have to be all dance floor either, by the way, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you listen to that string quartet version of Hyper Ballad and then you listen to Björk's studio recording of it, which is the original recording, you might assume that Björk's one was the remixed one, which is really interesting,
right,
how they stripped it down. And I love in that, I think that's a really good example of kind of non-traditional remixing in that way, because it sounds like Björk is in the room with those players, you know, but they really are just working off the stems that she's sent over, off whatever recording pieces that she's sent over. And it's stunning, it's amazing, and it does show that it's not just for the dance floor. It's about reinterpreting and using that song as an instrument, nearly, in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, there's other ones, like, I mean, we played the Beatles earlier on. Love is the name of that album, by the way, for people looking about it. It's from 2006, 51552 being the text. And, like, I mean, I think two of the bigger ones from the sort of, well, the beginning of a lot of it was the Human League with Love and Dancing and Pet Shop Boys with Disco. Mm-hmm. But I remember Linkin Park, I had to interview Linkin Park once, and they brought out this thing called Reanimation, and it was just the kind of, I thought, OK, whatever this is, we don't need this. It just didn't work. Sometimes for me, it's nothing, right? But I mean, as you say, like, you know, like, take Michael Jackson, Blood on the Dance Floor. Tell me about that one.
a huge, huge record. Good, the Dance Floor History in the Mix from 1997. So this is the second album released on his own label. So there might be kind of financial incentive for him to release this. And it's 8 remixes from his previous album, History, and then 5 new songs. It's a very interesting one. It was conceived, the idea of it for it was conceived while he was touring Europe for the History World Tour. And he was exposed to these kind of Euro dance remixes of various songs. So he went about that. And it was a hit in Europe, but it wasn't really a hit in the US. And whether that's, I mean, there's kind of talk, there was talk about there not being very much PR for the album in the US, and that might be the case, and then there was a lot more in Europe.
Course, yeah.
But I reckon it might also have been that European sensibilities just have kind of had a desire for remixes for maybe a little bit longer. Maybe America just took a little bit longer to kind of catch
so
on.
In
to
one way, you're saying for
remixes,
America, yeah, like, don't mess with the originals; they're fine as they are. I'll tell you what I do: Michael Jackson, Too Bad, the Refugee Camp mix.
Too bad, too bad.
John Forte like a major holiday. I met with MJ in the ranch in Santa Fe. Floating till I'm seasick, the hottest on the remix. Blast up a crash while I laugh at your V6. T-double-O-B-A to the D. You just double A, small time battery. Buffet, you can't eat off the floors we've been. Work life, the power lunches at the Four Seasons. Too bad.
What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Tired of you hurting me.
Too bad, the Refugee Camp mix. I mean, earlier on I played a brand new single from Alt J, and they brought out their, whatever it was called, the reduxer of the relaxer. In other words, they brought out a thing with all these hip-hop people because they wanted to work with hip-hop people. And they had Twin Shadow and Pusha T and a million others that I've never even heard of. But anyway, they wanted to reimagine the music, and they said, why not? You know, it's not even a stopgap. We just wanted to do that. They did it, and some of it I thought was really good. Anyway, they do have the new album coming out now, Normal, if you like, if I can call it that, Alt J album. But Michael Jackson there, that was done, and that made lots of money as well. Gil Scott-Heron, tell me about that.
Yeah, Gil Scott-Heron is a really interesting one. So the album is We're New Here, which is Jamie XX, Jamie Smith, who's a producer, remixer, percussionist, and was part of the band The XX. Back in 2011, he was touring with his band The XX. He wasn't like massively known at the stage, but he was starting to build up a bit of a reputation as a really good remixer. Yeah. He'd remix artists like Adele and Glasser, and people were starting to pay attention. So Gil Scott-Heron's label reaches out to him and says, do you want to do a remix of I'm New Here, which is Gil Scott-Heron's 2010 album, which is his first album in, I think, 16 years. Really, really critically acclaimed, very, very personal album to him, very minimalist, quite difficult actually to get through from beginning to end because it's very, very emotional and deals with themes around, you know, his past as a drug addict. Can be quite difficult. But Jamie XX, being a massive, massive fan of Gil Scott-Heron, said yes. And the pair communicated via letter, which I love, to talk about what they wanted to do with the album. And I think he just breathed just this complete new life into this spoken word. And he cycles through all these different underground dub genres.
Well, I'll give you a blast then. I'll Take Care of You. It's basically Gil Scott-Heron and Jamie XX.
I know you've been heard by someone else. I can tell by the way you carry yourself. But if you let me, here's what I'll do. I'll take care of you.
So, Andrea, what's happened here is that Jamie XX has taken it because he's a big fan of Gil Scott-Heron, has put his own stamp on it, has done whatever it has to be. And this is an album that you like now, is it? Yeah?
Yeah, I quite like it. I think I'm more interested in it rather than liking it. For me, it's the original.
One of the points I'm trying to make is that if this was the only one you heard, if you never heard the original, then fine, this is great, this is a great sound, so it doesn't matter. Isn't that it, really?
Absolutely. I think that this sounds like a collaboration between two people rather than just kind of throwing a dance beat underneath, you know, a Michael Jackson. I mean, there's a couple of songs in that Michael Jackson record that you could really only describe as dodgy. The Earth song remix being one of them. But I think I can hear a lot of care in this album.
All right, well then let's get up to where we are now then, because the past year there was Nowhere to Dance, but you know, Dua Lipa, Roisin Murphy, Lady Gaga, as I mentioned earlier, they all had very successful remix albums, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. They did, yeah. I think there's been a major shift in attitude towards the remix album lately, and I think part of that reason is the COVID-19 pandemic. So a lot of these big albums, even before the remix albums came out, Lady Gaga, Dua Lipa and Roisin Murphy released three albums that were made for the dance floor in one way or another. Big pop albums, big dance albums, and nobody could dance to them. So I think it's fitting, absolutely, that they're going to be remixed and re-released again, so that they actually get their chance at the club. So
hold on a second, give us that again, because if Lady Gaga's Chromatica and then Dua Lipa's Future Nostalgia, and I can't remember what the other one was,
Roisin Murphy, Crooked Machine.
Yeah, okay, so Roisin Murphy, like, they released an album. Are you saying that they're now being remixed again? Is that it?
Yeah, so Lady Gaga released Chromatica earlier in the lockdown, and now Dawn of Chromatica is the remix album.
Were they not dancing enough in the first place?
I mean, you could argue that they were. I would say they were. Yeah. I mean, I don't think you needed to do anything to, in particular, Lady Gaga's Chromatica. I think that was absolutely that was hyper pop. That was ready for the club already. But there's a couple of songs on it that I can't help but be happy that exist in the world. I don't know if I needed the whole album, but.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you one then. Here is Lady Gaga. This is Rain on Me, the Arca remix. That to me just sounds odd. I mean, first of all, you can hardly, I don't know where Lady Gaga is in that mix, but there's some thumping going on saying, this is a dance remix, so we better make it dancey. Listen, hold on. Yeah, whatever.
Right, that doesn't make you
want to
go out to the club.
Definitely not. No, I don't know. Hey, anyway, I wouldn't be an expert. I certainly don't know the original. So anyway, Rain on Me, the Arca remix, that's Lady Gaga. Let's try something different. Let's try, this is Crooked Madame. This is Roisin Murphy. Going to work on the dance floors. I mean, like, I'm not against songs that have everything but the kitchen and the kitchen sink in it, you know, like every, like, a thousand different bits and pieces, you know. Like, I mean, I always think The Fly by U2 is one of their greatest songs, and it's got so much going on in there that your head will explode if you listen to it in headphones, but it works. But I mean, the Lady Gaga, yeah, really? Anyway, the Roisin Murphy one, it's proper, listen.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Roisin's voice is a big part of that. There's not much you can put under her voice that she's not going to save, to be honest, because her voice is just so good. But Yeah, her album Roshi Machine was another big victim of the pandemic, in that we didn't get to dance to it, and it was one of these albums that was written for the dance floor. So when it came to the remix album Crooked Machine, she turned to her longtime collaborator Richard Barrett, who is this kind of legend of the UK underground scene, and Roshi Machine was already dance floor enough, so the brief here was to kind of reinterpret this in a way that reflected the house and techno scene, specifically in early 1990s Sheffield, where the pair of them kind of first met and began their long-standing working relationship, which I think is a really interesting way to kind of imbue it with a bit of sense of nostalgia, and also for people who are aware of that scene into that scene. I'm not very knowledgeable about that scene, so I'm very much taking their word for this. But either way, it's a great listen, you know.
God, I hope you're not looking my way for that one. Okay, so basically then, Andrea, do you think the success of remix albums by these pop artists of the moment is going to kick off a trend? Am I going to see this become a staple of pop album releases?
I absolutely think so. I think, you know, what's very important with the modern remix album is that you have to strike while the iron is hot. During the pandemic, the iron is hot now. People want to get out and get dancing, so we're seeing a lot of remix albums. And I think as well, because of how much we've moved forward in technological innovations, people can remix things from home. You don't need to fly someone out to LA to get them in the studio with you and remix. Anyone can do it from anywhere. And I think that those remote production costs allow people to collaborate. So it means that the artist, the label, and the person remixing, none of them have anything to lose.
It's hilarious though when you say collaborate, because 80% of the time the people doing the remixing, etc., have never met the people that we're talking about. Just one last one I want to look at, which is the Dua Lipa one that we started off mentioning, the Club Future Nostalgia with the Blessed Madonna. Tell me all about that.
Yeah, so apparently this Club Future Nostalgia is the remix of Future Nostalgia, which was a massive, massive hit last year. And the idea to remix it apparently came as a response to seeing her fans dancing to the record at home during lockdown. I imagine if it was as a response to seeing her album going to number one all around the world, and she was thinking about how much money she could get out of this. But yeah, it probably had something to do with it. And I mean, she worked with loads of people in this. She worked with Masters at Work, with Mark Ronson, Stuart Price, and she also has guest appearances from Blackpink, Missy Elliott, Jamiroquai, if you remember them, Madonna, and Gwen Stefani. So there's a lot going on this record, but in addition to that, there was kind of this new remix form in the form of a visualizer, where she also created a music video for every one of the songs on the record.
Of course she did.
And each one of those songs is designed by a different artist that mirrors the album
structure. Of course they are.
But, you know, these things are also released in various physical formats, digital formats, and it keeps these songs in the charts. It keeps the Spotify.
Well, here, I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds of what you're talking about here. So a journalist and host of the My Favourite Album podcast, Andrea Cleary. Andrea, thanks for talking to us on the programme today.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.